Please silence all electronic devices.
I'm sorry, folks. I don't trust them. And our folks don't trust them.
There is a great deal of overreaction from those who are criticizing this legislation. They will see me in court. You know, if the General Assembly were really trying to do a power grab, there's a lot of things the General Assembly could do, and we weren't.
And they don't have a very good track record there.
Any further discussion or debate?
It's Friday, February 2nd, 2018. This is the WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Thank you for tapping that play button. Today on the program, a conversation with North Carolina's 75th governor, Democrat Roy Cooper. Since taking office 13 months ago, our state's executive has made the opioid crisis one of his priorities. He served on President Trump's Opioid Commission, rolled out a state action plan, and also signed a bill from state lawmakers known as the STOP Act. Still, as you're aware, this epidemic continues to strain communities across the state. There are drug costs, resources diminishing, and ancillary problems in the medical world, such as hepatitis C. This week, WUNC had a series of stories on the issue titled Hitting Home. As you're in the car, yard, or wherever this weekend, I encourage you to give those a listen. As part of our coverage, Jason DeBruin, he's the station's data reporter, and I spent some time with the governor in Wilmington, Charlotte, Fayetteville, and points in between. His aim was to hear from law enforcement officers on the front lines, medical professionals, advocates, and also some of the many people impacted by opioid drug use. After all this, we sat down with the governor to discuss that commission I mentioned earlier, possible outcomes for this issue, as well as what he took away from his tour across the state. Here's our conversation.
Knowledge of this crisis for the public is critical, but it's beginning to touch almost every family in every neighborhood. It's very rare that you find someone who hasn't known someone or some family that's been affected by this.
You've made stops in a number of places now, coast to the mountains, obviously some in between. I'm wondering, you've met a lot of people, you've seen, you know, how this is impacting various communities. Is there a particular person that stands out for you? Is there a moment? What, as you've made these half dozen stops or so, you know, just continues to resonate for you?
I met a young man in Asheville who, through pain medication, had developed a significant opioid dependency. He hit rock bottom in his life, and what was amazing to me, but I found this is very typical, that breaking the cycle of dependency for opioids is a gradual process for most of the people who go through this. And this young man in Asheville had had relapse after relapse, but finally, through medication-assisted treatment, was able to get himself straight. And I remember the success stories that I hear, but see how difficult it is and how treatment is often a journey for people. And we have to remember, as we're trying to help them, that it is a journey and that it's a very difficult process, and we need to provide them all of the help that they need, because the stigma of this is affects almost everybody who deals with the problem. If you have cancer, you treat it. If you have a heart condition, you treat it. Substance use disorder needs to be treated. And what's also amazing to me is how even the most hardened law enforcement officers have come to understand this and are pushing the treatment end of this, because it's so important for us to dig our way out of this hole.
You've used the words comprehensive. I mean, I've heard you use that several times, a multi-pronged approach. Walk me through some of the details, some of the specifics of what that is, if that's money, if that's beds, if that's a certain number of naloxone kits, if that's X from the federal government. I mean, what is, we know some of the areas, but what is comprehensive?
First, comprehensive is reducing the supply of prescription drugs to the population. We've, for decades now, stressed pain management and were too freewheeling, clearly, with opioids. The entire medical profession has begun to realize its mistake. And so number one is reducing the amounts of prescriptions, making sure that people aren't doctor shopping through our prescription drug monitoring program. The second thing is treatment and making sure that more people get treatment. The third thing is the law enforcement recognition that, yeah, we got to continue to go after the drug traffickers and the drug dealers, but that at the user level, we need to get people into treatment and have available the life-saving naloxone for people to have them recover. And I think the most important thing, and the thing that's been so frustrating to me, every person needs comprehensive health care coverage. And the refusal by the North Carolina legislature to expand Medicaid is affecting this issue. We know that people are dying. We know that thousands of overdoses are occurring. We know that more and more babies are being born addicted. We know that in the last 5 years that foster care has increased for children by 25%, a lot related to this problem. So it is a systemic issue that's facing our society, so it requires a comprehensive systemic approach to attack it.
Let me cut to something that you said right off at the top, which was reducing the number of prescription opioids that are available. By cutting that back significantly, it's going to create another problem. And we're already starting to see a bit of a diversion toward heroin, fentanyl, and some other illicit narcotics. Talk a little bit about what the state needs to do and what you as governor can do specifically to make sure that we're not just simply sending people from prescription opiates to the illicit drugs.
Well, first, that is already happening. A larger and larger proportion of the overdoses are now as a result of street heroin, often laced with fentanyl. We need to slow down the prescription drugs as a preventive measure to make sure our medical providers manage prescription drugs better and use alternative pain relief, because that's going to stop or significantly slow down the number of people who become addicted to opioids, because you trace it back to, I think, the freewheeling use of prescription opioids has been the most significant problem that we have seen. So reducing the number of people who become addicted through prescription drugs is important. But that also means we still have the problem with the fact that although prescription drugs might have created the dependency, now they're finding cheaper alternatives in street heroin, and the deaths are still occurring. So treatment, law enforcement assisted diversion, making sure that we have medication assisted treatment and good quality health care can help us stem the tide. But I do think we've got to start with prescription drugs. And with the passage of the STOP Act, and you're seeing it across the country, states are recognizing that this is a big problem, that prescription opioids have gotten us into this jam, and we got to start by making sure that we stem that tide.
Yeah, I think it's pretty well documented. The STOP Act is doing good things, but by far, you know, is that the final domino, so to speak. You know, you mentioned things like law enforcement diversion. Those are important, but even the use of naloxone is not widespread across the state. How can we get that, how can we get naloxone kits, for example, and how can we get law enforcement diversion, methadone, for example, medication-assisted treatment? How can we get some of these things into the minds of people that are in some of these outlying counties to where they can actually provide the proper care, and we're not just sitting here in the mansion talking about it?
Clearly, our opioid action plan hopes to bring about some of those changes that you just talked about, making sure that not only all emergency medical technicians and healthcare providers and law enforcement officers have access to naloxone, which can revive people, but that we get it out on the street, and so that families who know that they have someone there who has substance use disorder, that they have the naloxone ready to revive them. And we know a lot of reversals are occurring between friends and family, because we have made it known that naloxone saves lives. So I think that that is beginning to work, and people are beginning to understand that we do have to have naloxone everywhere. We're also working to pull in, we've got a council of payers where we're pulling in all of these healthcare providers and insurers to try to find more ways to get people coverage for treatment. And this has to go to all 100 counties in North Carolina, and we're working on making sure that we minister to the areas that are seeing the biggest problems. But the problem is that this problem cuts through a broad cross-section of every socioeconomic status, every race, every area of the state. And public awareness and the push for health care coverage and more health care coverage for people, I think, is going to be the biggest thing that we can do to tackle this crisis, and that is what it is a crisis.
I think if we're being candid and honest with ourselves, there are a lot of entities that perhaps could have done more over the last 20 years. The media could have started stories sooner and looked at this more thoroughly. Legislatures across the country probably could have done more. Collectively, the legislatures, attorney generals, governors, media, a number of folks, advocates, could have done more to perhaps raise awareness and push back against the pharmaceutical companies. Trying to spin this one forward, you were attorney general for 16 years. Tell me about lessons or a lesson that you have learned from your time in that office, and how that has influenced or affected your conversations with Attorney General Stein, and what kinds of recommendations you're making to him.
Well, first, I was urging the Medicare care profession to use the prescription drug monitoring program a decade ago, telling them that it was critical that they knew if their patients were doctor shopping and were getting opioids from other prescribers. Our system was voluntary for a long time. I remember how hard it was even to set it up, because people were concerned about privacy and there was concern that the data would be misused. So it was a major push just to get a prescription drug monitoring program in place. But then I spent a lot of time and a number of years in speeches at the Medical Society, the Hospital Association, trying to get them to use the system, and we could never get more than 25 to 30%. I kept telling them that this was going to have to be mandatory. Would have liked to have seen a mandatory process sooner, and I talked to Attorney General Stein and others about that, and eventually we came to the conclusion that the STOP Act was absolutely necessary in North Carolina to make use of that mandatory. Clearly, people have to have personal responsibility to get themselves into treatment, and people have to understand that they have to make the move to get themselves into treatment. But we need to do more to provide that treatment to people, even those who have private health insurance, even those who are covered by Medicaid. There's more that we can do, and what our Secretary of Department of Health and Human Services is doing right now is making our Medicaid program more friendlier to people with substance use disorder and giving them more opportunities, and we want that to spread to private insurance as well.
Are there any pharmaceutical executives who, in your eyes, should be prosecuted criminally for what's happened?
There's a lot going on in the legal field determining who was at fault here. I think clearly the pharmaceutical industry, medical providers, all should have been more aware about the addictive nature of opioids. And yes, we need to hold people accountable, but we also need going forward to find solutions to this problem. You know, we had pain management became such an important part of the hospital culture. I mean, that was a question that you would ask patients when they would leave the hospital about their pain level. And hospitals certainly wanted to get good marks from patients. So we knew that opioids could help relieve pain. So a lot of them were being prescribed in what, in retrospect, was a haphazard way without knowledge of what they were doing. So yes, we need to demand accountability, but we also need to work together with this problem going forward to change things. I think you saw that with people coming together with the STOP Act, even though providers don't like the idea of having to check that record every time they see a patient, they knew that it was critical in the process.
You talked about Medicaid expansion. I think clearly that's a component. As the state moves towards works through its waiver through the Carolina CARES initiative, there is a possibility for more people to qualify for Medicaid, maybe not the entire number that someone like yourself might like to see, but certainly more people. Of course, that would potentially come with a work requirement and some other strings attached, but is that maybe a good political compromise, shall we say, to get more people covered and then ideally to get more people not only the programs and the treatment that they need, but also, for example, with the work requirement, have a way to check on them and make sure that they aren't diverting to, say, heroin or other street drugs?
Well, first, I'm for straight-up Medicaid expansion. It is crazy for the state of North Carolina to refuse billions of dollars from the federal government to ensure over 600,000 people in North Carolina that would help everybody's insurance premiums, that would help us all keep from having to pay for the uninsured, that the federal government pays most of, and I had it worked out with CEOs of hospitals, that they would take care of the state match. So we were talking about a situation with relatively few new state tax dollars, but an influx of tens of thousands of good health care jobs and more people covered for our state. As I began, when I first became governor last year, the process of beginning to move toward this, the Republican leadership in the General Assembly sued me in federal court to stop me from moving toward Medicaid expansion. Since that time, we've been pushing. I embraced a Republican-led initiative by some of the House members that they have not convinced the Republican leadership yet. But Carolina CARES was an expansion of Medicaid. Yes, it had a work requirement with some exemptions, but most of the people that we're going after here are working anyway. They're just making too much money to qualify for Medicaid, and many of them don't want to stop working to qualify for Medicaid. They want to keep working and helping support their families. So we're trying to find a way to expand it. Now that we are at the height of this opioid crisis, that is yet another reason why the Republican leadership in the General Assembly should look toward Medicaid expansion as the way to deal with this. The Secretary of Health and Human Resources, Mandy Cohen, my secretary, has submitted a comprehensive Medicaid plan that combines physical and behavioral health and how Medicaid is going to respond to that. That's an efficient use of dollars. And a lot of that depends on them taking the step to take these federal dollars to expand Medicaid. Yes, there needs to be some way to move forward. I'd rather just be able to say one word to the federal government, which would be, yes, we will take your billions of dollars that are now going to other states, and we'll do this. I remain hopeful that we can work something out in this short session of the General Assembly. We're continuing to push. This makes economic sense as well as healthcare sense for the people of our state.
You've been clear on that point before, and certainly others have, but I think the Republican leadership has also been clear in their point. And in some ways, it's easy to stand here and say, well, this is something that we should do, but if it's not going to happen, don't you have to resort to a plan B? So what is your plan B to help people that actually need help?
Well, first, the plan B is to take the Republican plan, Carolina Cares, and see if we can get the General Assembly to adopt it. They haven't said no to that yet. And in fact, particularly now in talking about this opioid crisis, we're seeing more and more potential for this to happen. But in the meantime, we have to work with what we have. And we have applied for federal grants and have received some, which has allowed us to push out 40,000 naloxone units across the state. It has allowed us to expand treatment for people. The Secretary has used her authority to allow Medicaid patients without pre-approval to use medication-assisted treatment to get off of opioids. There's a lot of things that we can do in working with law enforcement with this law enforcement assisted diversion, where they're taking people instead of arresting them, making sure that they get into treatment, working with the healthcare and insurance providers across the state. All of those things are occurring now. I just wish that we could get more help. We could just say yes to the federal government. And also, the federal government needs to do more. I'm disappointed that so far the President's Commission, those proposals, very few of them have been acted on at this point. And I'm glad to see the emergency declaration was extended. I hope that means that some of these agencies are planning to take some action, which we continue to hear that they are interested and want to do this, but it's been disappointing that they haven't done it yet.
You were obviously are you still part of that commission? I mean, is that the commission is still seated, so to speak?
Well, no, the commission has finished the report and has concluded, and now we're waiting for action.
Right.
And in talking to Governor Christie and to people in the administration, they were looking at moving forward with a number of these proposals, and very little, if anything, has happened at this point. And there's a lot that can be done. Federal money can be freed up. Action can be taken to make a difference in this arena. There's still time for them to do it, but it's disappointing that they haven't yet.
The calculus can often be very complicated, but you've been doing this a long time in various branches. Tell me why you think they haven't acted, because you made your recommendations. As I think any reasonable person can agree, this is a really serious issue, and something needs to be done. Why haven't they moved on those?
It is so frustrating, because some of the things they could do that would alter rules that would not require that much of appropriation of federal money. I think one of the reasons is because they are looking, the Trump administration and Republican leadership in Congress is looking at severely cutting back on domestic spending. And one of those areas is healthcare. We saw the continued proposals to eliminate the Affordable Care Act and to move to block grants. And clearly the long-term goal was to significantly reduce investment in healthcare for people across this country. And we know that making sure that we deal with this opioid crisis is not an inexpensive proposition. We know that treatment is going to be required. So I think they're afraid of opening avenues that we know is going to cost money. They'd rather give tax breaks to the wealthiest and the corporations instead of investing in the education and health care of people. But that's another topic altogether. But it does fit into what we're talking about here, and it does matter.
I want to ask you about what I would coin a pretty messy intersection of politics and policy on this, and specifically policy related to needle exchange programs. You know, the research bears out that hepatitis C, as one example, is not going to spread nearly as freely if you provide you know, free needles, or if there are needles readily available. Legislature lifted a ban a couple of years ago on using state dollars for needles. That's one, syringes. The other is medical marijuana. And the data there shows that opiate overdoses in states with medical marijuana are down 20 to 25%. If we can, for a moment, set aside the political nature of that, but policy-wise, are those two things, either of those, both of those, could you get behind those?
Well, I think, number one, the first point you mentioned regarding syringe exchange has been shown to be effective not only in preventing the spread of disease, but it's also been effective in providing continued human contact with the person who has substance use disorder to get that person into treatment. And many of the people who are on the ground out there say that that matters. So, I mean, that is a proven effective method, one of the many methods of dealing with this. As to medical marijuana, I think the jury's still out on that. Patrick Kennedy on the commission had some strong feelings about that. Our commission did not want to get into that issue because it was so politically charged, and when you ever start talking about that, that's all anybody focuses on, and then you've got all of these other issues here dealing with substance use disorder and opioid dependency that have got to be attacked. I think we have to wait and see what happens in some of these other states where this has happened, because you may have a reduction in opioid overdose, but you have other issues that would be involved in that as well. So that I would take a wait-and-see approach for North Carolina on that issue. But I think this is a complex problem, and everything's got to be on the table as we go forward, because it's a crisis that we have to stop.
I want to circle back to something you said almost at the very beginning, and that relates to stigma. And I'm going to couple that with sort of mental and behavioral health. Clearly, you talk about mental and behavioral health, it's closely linked to drug use disorder. And you talked about stigma. There is still, I think the stigma is declining, but it still is quite large, particularly as it relates to drug abuse. What can you do as governor? What can the executive mansion, what can, you know, even people in your office do to really try to reduce that stigma and in that way, you know, get, you know, the public at large sort of more behind some of these treatment areas?
I was in High Point with emergency medical technicians, some of the toughest guys who've been around a long time, who believe in personal responsibility. They will all tell you to a person that substance use disorder is a brain disorder and one that has to be treated just like you would any physical illness. So I think that the stigma part of it is I have to say things like that as governor. You still have a problem with if someone has a heart attack, everybody brings casseroles over and people are visiting the family. If there's a substance use disorder, people are often shunned and people don't come to visit them, and it's something that they whisper about. And I think that's one of the things we have to change. People do have to have the personal responsibility to go to the doctor to get treatment, but at the same time, recognizing that this is an illness that needs to be treated. We need leaders saying that. We need church leaders saying that, civic leaders, business leaders, because it's something that we have to attack through treatment. And you can get people well. People can recover. Out on the trail, I've seen amazing success stories of people who have turned their lives around. And then other times I'm talking to a mom who lost her only son to opioid overdose, and it's happening more and more and more. Those tragedies have to stop. We need more success stories.
I was going to ask you this, and I am watching the clocks, and hopefully this doesn't come out as a silly question. We've spent a lot of time talking about leaders, elected officials and clergy, so on and so forth. What about the 10 million residents in the state? What is everyone else, what should we be doing?
I'd like to see voices raised to get more people health insurance coverage. I'd like people to understand that this is a treatment-oriented approach to saving lives, and they need to talk to their friends about it. They need to rise up and make sure that every single person in North Carolina has access to quality health care coverage, and that includes treatment for substance use disorder. And once we realize that that is something basic that everybody ought to have, and we got to find ways to get there, then we've come a long way, and we certainly are not there yet.
That was North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper. We spoke with him in the library room at the Executive Mansion. WUNC's series, Hitting Home, is available at our website, wunc.org. You can find previous editions of the podcast there as well. And if you liked this conversation, feel free to leave a comment on social media or give us a review on iTunes, Google Play, wherever it is that you grab that on-demand listening. For Roy Asbury and Jason Michael, I'm Jeffrey John asking you, well, what if there is no tomorrow? There wasn't one today. Happy Groundhog Day.